It's a big week for us. You know, we play a lot of weeks that are big, but this one is special in different ways. You know, I'm only in my third year of being a part of this rivalry, but I've already gone against that team five times. So there's, you know, kind of a fast track to get that experience under your belt. We're not referencing last year. We're not talking about it. I don't think it's going to be that far from anybody's mind. I don't think I need to say anything about it for it to be relevant for everybody, because it is in my mind and I'm not talking about it outwardly with anybody. That was a tough day and one that will sit with all of us for a while. And I think as long as we have an appropriate place for that right now, like I said earlier, this is not a revenge tour of any sorts. This is just an opportunity for us to be the best Blue Jay team we can be. You know, we represent each other the best we can. Hopefully we do that with the program the right way. I have no doubt there will be some fire from our guys on that field. And I am probably more conscious of tempering that going in than I am stoking it.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my Hopkins homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. There are four top 20 matchups on tap, plus it's rivalry week. There's no bigger rivalry in the sport than Hopkins, Maryland. And as you heard, we'll talk to JHU headman Peter Milliman. Plenty to get to in this week's show. So, Dixie, let's get it. What's up, Dixie? I'm fired up this week.
I can tell you're like shot out of a cannon.
It's
and you even put more emphasis on my Hopkins homie or whatever the descriptor you give for me every week. Is that because it's Maryland week and you feel like we need to unite even more?
A little bit. That's part of it. But also, before we started recording, we were talking about Hopkins homecoming last week.
Right.
And now we're talking about Maryland Hopkins week. We talked to Coach Milliman earlier, and you'll hear from him later in the show as well. So we're fired up, man. I'm excited for this weekend, especially that particular game at 6 o'clock on Saturday night on BTN.
Yeah, we've got a full slate for you this weekend. Friday night on Big Ten Network. Rutgers at Penn State, 6 o'clock. I'll be on that game with Joe at 6. I think I just said 6 like three times. And then it's Ohio State, Michigan, 8 o'clock. Jason Ross Jr. and Greg Bice will have that one. And then we close out the regular season for men's Big Ten lacrosse on Big Ten Network Saturday night, 6 o'clock. Hopkins at Maryland for the rivalry trophy and for Hopkins really to avenge a very disappointing and embarrassing loss at home last year to the Maryland Terrapins. So this is it's the first time in a couple years I've been really excited for this game. You know, 2021 Hopkins was competitive with Maryland, but it just had that, you know, it was the only conference stuff that they were playing.
Yeah.
Obviously 2020, the game was canceled. Last year was not fun for Hopkins people, really not fun for anybody. Watching that, unless you're a Maryland fan, that was like nirvana for you. This one, you know, both teams in the top 10, both teams incredible metrics, both teams great resumes, both teams talented. Should be a really good game.
And we'll get into all of that, but before we get to this weekend, let's review last weekend a little bit. Let's go back. Cornell got a significant win against Army. I think that was one of the standout wins, as well as Duke beating Virginia for the 18th straight time in the regular season. What were your takeaways from last week?
Cornell beating Army on the road, and CJ Kearse doesn't score a goal. That was impressive. Duke continues its regular season mastery over Virginia, something that no one really can ever figure out how that takes place. Yale got a nice win last week. They seem to be back on track. Big win over Brown. Penn State come from behind victory on the road in Michigan. Hopkins had been on a 4-game losing streak to Ohio State. They really handled the Buckeyes 17-8 on Saturday. Sunday night, Maryland came out like, got out to a 5-0 lead. I was really, really just befuddled with and disappointed in Rutgers' first quarter performance. A record-breaking crowd, almost 6,000 people at SHI Stadium. Tons of alum were there. The parking lot was jacked 2 hours before the game. Luckily, I could park right next to our production truck. I mean, kids everywhere, barbecue everywhere, tailgate galore. And Rutgers just came out really stiff and really crummy. Lost that game. Georgetown is rolling. Overtime win against Marquette on the road in Milwaukee. And then they turn around and hammer Loyola midweek this week, 23-7. That was disappointing if you're a Greyhound fan. But, I mean, Georgetown just looked like world beaters that night. So, wow, that's a lot of ground I covered. Vermont beat Bryant by a goal. And they have another big game this weekend in the America East. So, geez, I could just go on and on and on and on about all the great lacrosse, these terrific conference performances, and even some non-conference sprinkled in there. But here we are, man. 2 weeks left in the regular season. Some it's 1 week in the regular season. Then we're in the conference tournaments.
I mentioned last week, Dix, that I thought Cornell's win over Army was significant as a bellwether game for the Ivy League. Really, to as a fan, to see are they good in the non-conference at this point in the season. But also, now that I look at the RPI, the metrics, you see a bunch of Ivy League teams in the top 10, Cornell at number 5, Yale at number 9, and Penn at 10th in the RPI, which can all help their postseason chances, especially when there's a couple games left to play for Ivy League teams.
For sure. Yale 9, you know, with a strength of schedule, I think it's 12. Penn 10 in the RPI, strength of schedule 3. You look at Yale's wins, and that's what the next criteria you have to go to is wins. No top 5 wins, no top 10 wins, 2 top 15 wins in Denver and Villanova. Penn does have a top 5 win over Duke, but Cornell beating Army really bumped up that RPI for the Ivies and their opponents. And that's where people kind of had a problem with the metrics that are used to select the NCAA tournament. I mean, Army is 9-2. They've had a terrific season, but their RPI now is 21.
It's not a top 20 win for Cornell at the moment.
Right. But then you have Yale and Penn benefiting from Cornell. So it's a formula that, quite honestly, I don't have a firm grasp of to be an expert on it. I know enough to be dangerous, but you know, we're looking at, when we're talking about the Ivy League, we're talking to Princeton at number 18 in the RPI. What, they still have Harvard on their schedule, and they've already qualified for the Ivy League tournament, right?
Yes, they've qualified for the Ivy League tournament. They're 3-1 based on who they've beaten. They have Harvard this week and at Cornell next weekend to finish the season.
So, I mean, we could see they can't lose to Harvard in terms of the metrics, because then their RPI will drop. But if they can beat Harvard, then if they beat Cornell, I mean, then if they can steal a win in the Ivy League tournament, I mean, that might propel them into the, you know, low teens, maybe top 10 RPI-wise. We'll have to see how it goes.
The fortunate thing is there's a lot of teams still in play, fighting for either a automatic qualifier or an at-large berth. And it's a good segue into this week's game. Dix, it's rivalry week. There's league battles at the top of the standings across many conferences. And as I said, there's 4 top 20 matchups. So let's get right into it. The games on Friday night, 2 fantastic games in the Big Ten. Number 11 Rutgers, they're 8-4 now, will play at number 5 Penn State, who's 8-3, but 3-1 in the Big Ten. That game's at 6:00 on Big Ten Network.
So I just went through Penn State's resume. I think they're great. They're in great shape to go to the NCAA tournament. If Penn State wins, they clinch a share of the regular season title. And then if Maryland loses to Hopkins on Saturday night, Penn State is the outright champion. They'll be the number one seed, I should say, in the Big Ten tournament. Rutgers, meanwhile, they need some help. Strength of schedule 20, RPI 11. no top five wins, no top 10 wins, no top 15 wins, two top 20 wins in Princeton and Michigan. You know, Rutgers, I think Rutgers' best case scenario is to be the four seed and to host a quarterfinal game. Penn State coming off of a come from behind victory over Michigan. Rutgers, that disappointing home loss to Maryland. A couple guys got nicked up in that game. We'll see what their availability is. But, you know, this is always an entertaining game. It's always typically high scoring, mid-teens. And I anticipate another 14-12-ish, 14-13-ish, 15-13-ish kind of game.
In the second game of the Big Ten Network doubleheader, unranked Ohio State, they're 5-7 now, will travel to Ann Arbor to play number 18 Michigan at 8 o'clock. And this is a chance for Ohio State to get a really quality win over a big opponent, a big rival, in what has been a bit of a disappointing season for the Buckeyes.
Well, they have to win this game, because if they lose, they go to 5-8. And then they have to win the Ivy League championship. They have to win those three games just to be 500. Well, you get the automatic qualifier, but then you're 500. If they beat Michigan, they give themselves a little bit of breathing room, and they also put themselves in position to host the quarterfinals at number four, the four seed, because they already beat Rutgers head-to-head earlier this year. And I think we all have seen how well Ohio State plays at home in their new stadium. Michigan, same deal. You know, they beat Ohio State. Then they just, they have to win two games in the Big Ten tournament, or one game, excuse me, in the Big Ten tournament, because then they would be 7-6. So you really, both of these teams, by winning, will control their own destinies, so to speak. The loser is going to be facing a real uphill battle in the Big Ten tournament.
Moving on to an incredible slate of Saturday games. And it starts in the CAA, Dix, when Drexel, 7-4, will play its arch rival, the number 17 Delaware Blue Hens in Newark. Delaware's 9-3, 5-0 in the CAA. This is for first place in the CAA. It's at noon.
Delaware's a really good team. A terrific defenseman in Owen Grant. They have a great attackman scorer in Ty Kurtz. Very impressive. I had a chance to catch up with Coach Volker this weekend as his son plays for Georgetown. My son plays for Loyola. Saw him at Ridley a couple nights ago. And he was lamenting the loss to Hofstra. He thought they had their chances to win that game. But he said, the great thing is we have another opportunity, in front of us. And they kind of control their own destiny. So it should be a terrific CAA battle.
In the Patriot League, first place is on the line. Lehigh, 8-3 overall, 5-1 in the league, will play at Boston U, who's also 8-3, 5-1. This game's at noon. You can catch it on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah, my buddy Evan Washburn, I'm sure, is going to be on that call. Look, the Patriot League, Army, Lehigh, BU, all playing pretty good lacrosse right now. Loyola is struggling. They've lost four out of the last five. So this is a huge game. The Mountain Hawks, Scott Cole, is having a very good year for them. And then BU, they dominated Loyola last weekend, 16-9 at Nickerson. And, they've got, D'Alto and that returning attack that is, just works so well together. They're not going to overwhelm you with athleticism or razzle-dazzle. They're just a tough, hardworking team. And this one's going to be go a long way towards Patriot League seeding.
Moving into the ACC, number 14, North Carolina, really needs a win here. They're 7-5, 1-3 in the ACC, and they have a great opportunity. They play it at number one Notre Dame, coming off a bye week. They're 8-1, 2-1 overall. This game's at noon on ESPNU.
Yeah, Carolina 13th in the RPI, 14th strength of schedule. They let one get away from them last weekend at Good Counsel High School, losing to Syracuse in the final seconds. You mentioned it. This is a must win for the Tar Heels. I think if they can beat Notre Dame, they play Notre Dame back to back weekends. If they can get one against the Fighting Irish, I think that's going to do them wonders, and I think that would really boost them up. Easier said than done. We talked about Notre Dame a ton this year, and rightfully so. They had a bye last week, or they were idle, and they'll be fresh coming into this one. This one in Arlotta or Dirts?
It's at Arlotta.
Okay. So, you know, tough travel for the Tar Heels, but, you know, they've got the goods to get off the mat and fight back.
In a battle of the orange jerseys in the ACC, number 12, Syracuse. Been rolling lately. Travel to Charlottesville to take on the number 4 Virginia Cavaliers at 2:00 on ESPNU.
What colors do you dislike the most in this world?
Well, I don't know. I have a fondness. I have two brothers who went to Gettysburg College, so orange and blue, I'm kind of fond of.
You're okay with it?
Okay. I'm okay with it. Yeah, it's hard to say.
So you really don't have any?
Yeah, I don't have any that jump out at me. They're just like, ugh.
Yeah, one of mine would be orange. And my son, you know, Matt did play for Looney's Lacrosse Club, which is orange and green for a little bit. So, you know, I kind of, you know, softened my stance on it. But when I think of orange, Virginia, Princeton, Syracuse, you know, all teams that really got the better of my Johns Hopkins teams back in the 90s. So Virginia on social media, looks like they're rolling out a pretty sweet alternate uniform. Nice helmet, kind of like a throwback jersey. I don't know if they're wearing them this weekend or not. But look, Syracuse, 19th in RPI, strength of schedule, 11th. You know, Virginia is, you know, 3-5 in those two categories, and really, you know, a lock for a seed. In the NCAA tournament, huge opportunity for the Orange. You know, they've grown up this year. You know, they've gotten better as the season has gone on. Tall order, you know, facing a Cavalier team coming off of another regular season loss. I mean, look, Virginia's 8-3. Two of them are to Duke. So tall order for Syracuse.
The last two games are night games. And they're fantastic matchups. The best two rivalries in college lacrosse, in my opinion. And the first one is the Hopkins versus Maryland. Before we get to that game, let's bring in Hopkins head coach, Peter Milliman. Please welcome into the show the third-year head coach of the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, Peter Milliman. Coach, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Coach, really good to talk with you this morning. With all of our guests, we ask them to take a look back before we look at the present and then look toward the future. When you guys ended the 2022 season, you know, a disappointing season, a losing record, you don't go to the NCAA tournament, what are the first couple of things that you did when you look back on that to think, how can we get better, and what needs to be done in order to improve the team?
I mean, the first thing we do is have a team meeting and you know, kind of address the next steps going forward into the summer. You know, we need to start making a plan for how we're going to work, how we're going to communicate, how we're going to continue to build as a team and build some chemistry when we're all spread over the country or over North America. So, you know, that part was, I think, really important. And it started from some individual meetings following an immediate team meeting. And so, you know, it just starts to set the table for what we need to do going forward and the type of work we want to do together.
One of the changes that you did make was bringing on John Crawley and Brian Kelly, two alums, one offensive coordinator, the other volunteer assistant. What did that process look like, and how would you best characterize the impact that those two have had on the current ball club?
I mean, the impact has been phenomenal. Both of them are just, you know, very passionate Blue Jay alums, you know, care deeply about the experience that the guys on our current team are having. You know, they feel so strongly about the experience they had, and their passion for the program shines through in the way that they work. They're very diligent and committed coaches, but you know, they just serve as mentors to these guys more than anything else, and that's been great. I mean, the process to make it happen is I don't know, sometimes unique, sometimes challenging. It happens all different ways, but you know, I reached out to Coach Crawley as soon as I knew we would have an opportunity and began that process. And, you know, I'd worked through it a couple of years before, but, this time I was probably a little more aggressive about it.
You guys currently sit at 10-4, depending upon which poll you look at, rank 6, 7 in that neighborhood. How would you best describe 2023 thus far for the Blue Jays?
I think the guys have been doing a great job working together. I think from that first initial meeting, at the end of last spring, really set a mentality and a motion towards, the type of work that we needed to do to get better. And I don't think realistically this season we are talking about anything other than 2023. I don't think it's about, revenge or anything like that. I think it's more about just finding ways to be better at what we do and be, who we are. And I think that's what the guys have really taken a big bite out of and done a very good job with it. The leadership has been outstanding, from captains to seniors to, all the way through. I think freshmen have done a great job learning a system pretty quickly and really jumping on board all the way. So it's been it's been a good energy from that perspective.
Coach, one of the storylines that's developed throughout the season is the fourth quarter success of the Hopkins Blue Jays. What's been some of the keys behind that late game success?
Sometimes it's a little more interesting than your plan on it being. I think part of that is coming from, the drive and the confidence from, the leadership on the team. I think the guys and the seniors and the captains that I mentioned just really, have a determination to keep going and a belief in each other and what they do. I think there's some planning that we do throughout the week and throughout the season that has helped that a little bit. I think we're, trying to stay as fresh as we can throughout the week, trying to keep our guys in a position to have the energy with the end of the game when we get there. But I think the most important thing is that, the guys are just really playing for each other and they don't, they don't want to let one go by. It's not easy. They happen sometimes. I think we had a very similar storyline at Penn State. We just, didn't finish it. And it felt almost exactly like the other games around it, but, they made a couple plays we didn't, and that was the difference. And I think that's how close it ends up being when you're playing some really good teams. And that was a great learning lesson for us to not leave it to chance if we don't have to. If we don't need to make a 5-goal run in the fourth quarter to win the game, let's see if we can, do that at the beginning of the game or, just try and level it out a little bit. We've been maybe a little more inconsistent at times than we need to be. I think we can prevent a few more runs from the other teams. So just playing a little more discipline.
One of the phrases or a couple phrases that people use to describe Hopkins in 2023, tough and they play hard. And I've had the opportunity to call a number of your guys' games this year. Some of the games that stick out to me, St. Joe's, which I described as kind of a street fight between you guys and the Hawks. Delaware was another one that got really, really physical. Where does that toughness come from?
I think it's baked into the DNA of who we are. I think it's got to be a real significant piece of the underlying foundation of who we are. If we're not going to make tough plays, we're just going to rely on our abilities or our skill sets or, some sort of, I guess, crafty, strategic game plan to solve things. I don't think you control your own destiny as much. I don't think you play to your best abilities as much. I think it's something that we talk about all the time. It's one of the five bonds that we refer to in our team DNA is toughness. And I think we try and highlight those things as much as we can and just make sure guys understand like that's a separating factor in a game. It allows you to stay in every game if you are playing tougher than other teams, and it allows you to extend away from teams who aren't playing tough. And I think there's a lot of fundamentals that we try and highlight, but I think those two things that you said are characteristics that our team would want to take ownership of even before, you said that.
Looking at a little bit of a bigger picture, the Hopkins coaching job is probably the most unique in Division I lacrosse. You're the flagship program of the university's athletic department, but the Division III nature of the rest of the athletic department really separates you. I think a lot of lacrosse fans understand that relationship, that Hopkins lacrosse, men's and women's are the Division I programs, the rest of Division III, but I don't think many fans understand how incredibly successful the rest of the programs are at Johns Hopkins and the resources that are there for those teams to compete at the highest level on the Division III scene. It presents some unique challenges for you as a coaching staff, but how do you use that to your advantage? What are some of the opportunities behind that unique situation that Hopkins Lacrosse sits in?
You know, I think that's a great question. I really appreciate that you brought it up because it doesn't get enough recognition. I mean, I think we currently sit number one in the Director's Cup chase. I think we're pretty close to setting a record for the points achieved in the fall for the Director's Cup. I think, you know, as a whole, the athletic department is a high performing organization, and, you know, getting a chance to learn and work with other great coaches here, regardless of the division that they're coaching or even the sport that they're coaching, there's some fantastic coaches and there's some fantastic student athletes here. And I think it's more important that we embrace our role here as members of an athletic department, regardless of division, than it is we try and isolate ourselves and try and be different and unique. I think, you know, our athletes appreciate the work that the other athletes put in, whether they're playing lacrosse or football or soccer or anything. And we want to continue to work on that and to be better teammates and to, you know, understand how challenging it is to be successful at Johns Hopkins because of your workload and because of your course schedules and because of the, you know, the competition that you're playing and things like that. And so, you know, it is in some ways a unique difference. But I think the more we, you know, like I said, try and embrace it and use that as an opportunity to elevate everybody around us and also learn from them. I mean, we've had multiple teams winning national championships and multiple teams making it to championships and Final Fours and Elite Eights and things like that. And so, you know, all of that, you know, just I think breeds more success around you.
Hopkins always plays one of the toughest, if not the toughest schedule in college lacrosse. And when you look at the 2023 docket, in this age of conference alignment responsibilities and also trying to keep traditional rivals on the schedule, I know it's been a challenge for you and your staff. I mean, you look at in February, you go Georgetown, North Carolina, Loyola in a week. Then you go to March, St. Joe's, Virginia, Syracuse, all in a week. And then you have the double dip Friday, Sunday with Navy and Delaware. I just wonder if you could touch on, you know, how you put that schedule together and what challenges you face. And, you know, when you put together a schedule, not just that competitive, but when you're playing some top teams in very short turnaround times.
Yeah, the layers of challenge that we put on top of some of those really, you know, pretty immediate difficult situations. You know, some of it's by design. Some of it just kind of happens that way. You know, you don't always plan, you know, for every team to be where they are or how things, you know, you never really know. You just got to play the game that's in front of you. But, you know, you did mention there are some traditional rivalries here that we need to continue to work on and maintain as much as possible. There's some that we don't currently have on the schedule that we got to work on rolling back into the mix. And, you know, it's just going to be a constant evolution, I think. But, you know, maybe the first thing you said, I think, is the most important here is that we have the opportunity to play the hardest schedule in the country. And I think that's a responsibility at this program. I think that's an opportunity for the guys on the team, the guys in the locker room, the guys that we're recruiting. You want to play the best teams in the country. You can do that here. And that's the plan. And it doesn't always lead to immediate success. It doesn't always, you know, prove to be the right decision at the time. But I think it helps develop our young men for challenging situations. I think it helps develop the team for belief and trust in each other when they can start to manage some of those difficult situations. And there was some learning. I think, you know, the first time we played 3 games in 8 days, I don't think we did it as well as we did it the second time. And we played some tough teams, both of them. And I think playing a 2-game weekend is difficult. I don't know if I'd want to do it all that much, but it definitely allows you to learn a little bit more about the schedule and how to manage that, you know, 72-hour window and what you do in between and how you prep going into the week and realistically how you prep coming out of it. Cause if you win it, you might have another game in 6 days and, you know, how do you plan that next Monday, Tuesday and get yourself to a Saturday game. So, you know, that's kind of the base layer of, you know, why it's built that way. And I think probably the other factor that really, you know, kind of falls over top of all of it is the RPI being such a significant piece about tournament selection. Like, if you're not managing that the best you can, I think you're missing opportunities to put yourself in the tournament. And, you know, whether we win every game or not, we're trying to. And if we can play teams that we think are going to help us in that selection opportunity, then I think that's our responsibility.
Calling the Ohio State game this past weekend, it reminded me of the opportunity that Johns Hopkins Lacrosse provided the Buckeyes back in the mid to late 90s when they were a fledgling program, you know, trying to get to that next level. You were able to schedule Utah and St. Joe's in weekends that may have been North Carolina, Virginia, but you had to play midweek. You know, how important is that for a Johns Hopkins to give opportunities to programs like that to let them come in really two really good teams and compete on Homewood Field?
You know, that's an interesting question. I'm not really sure how I should answer that, because I you know, I don't want to make it sound like it's a charity of any sorts, but
of course not.
I think,
no.
You know, by every stretch, we're trying to play the best competition we can. And that's, you know, that's where those teams ended up. I mean, we had open weekends, and as I reach out, you know, those are the teams that were available. And I thought those were great competitions. Like I said, with the, you know, the selection criteria, I thought they could have been really, you know, good teams to add to the schedule. You know, if we can play a part in the expansion of lacrosse in any capacity, I mean, I would love to continue to help that. I think there is actually one factor that hinders it a little bit, and that is that the RPI factors in every team on your schedule, not just your top competition, not just your top 10 or 12. So it actually brings your RPI down to play a 15th game against a team that's not in the top 30 and not in the top 40. If you play a team, even if you win 20-0, it hurts your chances of getting into the tournament. And I think you're looking at a lot of teams that are at the top of the RPI that have done that, you know, by manipulating their schedule and not playing lower rated teams. And I think that's something that we need to find a way to adjust so that it doesn't do a disservice to the up and coming programs, to the newer teams that would really benefit to get on the schedule. Right now, it doesn't benefit us to schedule, you know, teams that are going to be really low in the RPI. I think that's unfair.
Yeah, I could have definitely asked that question better. Thank you for calling me on that.
Because that's all right.
I called both those games, and the Utes and the Hawks.
Yeah, they're good. They're really
good
teams.
Tough outs.
I mean,
tough
outs. Utah's a top 20 RPI right now. And yeah. I don't know where St. Joe's is, somewhere in that next 20 or 30 or something like that. But yeah, tough teams. I mean, you said that the St. Joe's game's a street fight. I mean, we watched it on film. I'm like, they're not just sliding to get to your hands. They're sliding to go through your body. Like, you will. it is going to be physical whether you like it or not. And you know, Delaware is very much the same way. Like, they play that way. And, you know, it's good competition. It's good opportunity for you guys to learn.
Well, big opportunity comes this Saturday, which brings the rivalry, the game that players and fans of both programs look forward to and circle as a highlight every season. Last year was maybe a low point of the season. But how has that result become motivation for the team? And how has this team channeled that this year? I'm sure there's a pep in everybody's step this week of practice.
There's a pep. There's no doubt. You know, it's a big week for us. You know, we play a lot of weeks that are big, but this one is special in different ways. You know, I'm only in my third year of being a part of this rivalry, but I've already, you know, gone against that team five times. So there's, you know, kind of a fast track to get that experience under your belt. We're not referencing last year. We're not talking about it. I don't think it's going to be that far from anybody's mind. I don't think I need to say anything about it for it to be relevant for everybody, because it is in my mind and I'm not talking about it outwardly with anybody. That was a tough day and one that will sit with all of us for a while. And I think as long as we have an appropriate place for that right now, like I said earlier, this is not a revenge tour of any sorts. This is just an opportunity for us to be the best Blue Jay team we can be. You know, we represent each other the best we can. Hopefully we do that for the program the right way. I have no doubt there will be some fire from our guys on that field. And I am probably more conscious of tempering that going in than I am stoking it.
Who are the leaders this year for the 2023 Blue Jays that have made a big difference for the team?
I mean, our captain group is outstanding. And they do a great job leading from the front. They lead by example. You know, Bo Zuluk, Jack Hawley, and Garrett Degnan are three of the best young men that you could ask for. They work their butts off. They are very detail-oriented. They care very much about the guys they work with, and they're great teammates. And I think that it's kind of a two-headed monster, to be honest with you, because the senior class is such a powerful entity for us right now. Like, this group of of eight young men who are in their fourth year. Right? There's another group when you come to fifth years and grad students and things like that. And I'm not trying to discount them, but the guys who were freshmen here 4 years ago, there's seven of them. Then you add Bo Zuluk, so it's eight. But you know, those guys are in their last semester of undergraduate, and they have had a tough go. You know, all of the college seniors in the country had a COVID freshman year where they lost the season. But this group here also had a coaching change in a really high profile way, in a really dramatic sense. You know, those folks were all recruited by the previous coaching staff. They were very close to them. They respect them very much, and those are tough bonds to break and tough relationships to have to deal with a change. And they've had some struggles here as well, and they've dealt with some tough days, and at a place where it's very visible and the expectations are very high, and there's a lot of criticism following it. And so it has really strengthened that group. I think they've been forged through that that fire and really come out the other side a strong and resilient and determined group. And I think they're leading us in a big way. And so I think, you know, the balance between that senior class and that the group of captains, I can't really emphasize any one side more than the other. They're both just so significant for us, and I have just so much respect for the way that they're doing things and you know how selfless they are about this and how much they're propelling this team. I think they're just doing a great job.
As you prepare for the game this week, what has been your impression of the Terps that you've seen on film, and what do you think are some of the keys for the Blue Jays to get a win on Saturday?
I think we need to play hard and play disciplined and play tough, like you guys were mentioning earlier. That definitely has become a staple of what we think our version of the game is right now. There needs to be when I tie in the discipline and the fundamental aspect of it, we need to play a cleaner game. We can't be sloppy. We can't give up 3, 4, 5 goal runs. We can't get reckless and have perimeter turnovers because we're not moving our feet. We can't go off sides because we're not paying attention to who's coming back, like little things like that. And we're not, I don't think, overstating that to the team right now, just working on those fundamentals, making sure we're practicing substitution and everything we do and the spacing on our clears and stuff like that. But Maryland is very good. You know, they're very well coached. You know, they don't make a lot of mistakes. They haven't historically. Tills is one of the best coaches there is, and he does such a good job of building his team to play to their strengths. And you know, it's going to be a battle. There's no doubt about it. Like they're going to challenge us in basically every area. You know, we need to manage the possession battle as best we can. If we can win the possession battle, that would be massive for us. If we don't win the possession battle, it's a tough day against Maryland.
A couple of non-lacrosse related questions to bring this home. Thank you for your time today. One of the fun aspects of working in a college athletic department, I did it for decades, is building relationships with other coaches and meeting and getting to know student athletes from the other teams. Is there one particular team at Hopkins that you love to go watch play?
That's a good question. I've gotten along pretty well with the basketball coach. I've gone to a bunch of theirs, games. I stop by practice when I see him. I think he does a very good job. Football practices, a lot of times when we're coming into to work in the morning. So I see them out there and they'll stop and watch drills. I think they're good coaches. I don't know. I mean, there's so many. The volleyball coach is incredibly successful. Both the men's and women's soccer coaches have done well. I don't really know if I could single out any more than than Josh and the basketball program. But I don't know. There's a lot of folks here that do well.
Absolutely. All right. Last question. Someone's coming from out of town, family, friends, or maybe a recruit. What restaurant do you recommend they go eat at?
You should take your family to Sammy's. That's the best restaurant in town. That's a good question. I like Poppy's Tacos in Hamden. Been there a few times. Johnny's is right up the street here in Roland Park. That's a good one. I don't know. I don't get out that much, so I don't have the. You know, I spent my first year and a half here without really being able to go out to restaurants. So I don't know if I have the depth of experience on this as other places I've lived yet.
All right, Coach. Well, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you and the Jays the rest of the season, and especially this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Things are looking up at Homewood Field.
They are. And you know, I think we first got to talk to Coach Milliman 2 years ago on this podcast. And, you know, he was a little, he doesn't really know us. He was a little stiff. And I think this time around, you can tell he's more comfortable. I'm not going to say relaxed, but he's more comfortable. And I think he feels good about his team and how they're playing and, you know, how they're conducting themselves.
So let's talk about the game. And the Jays are ranked number 7 in the IL media poll this week. They're 10-4. Maryland is number 3 in the poll. They're 8-3. Both teams are 3-1, along with Penn State. So this is an important game for seeding in the Big Ten tournament. And you'll be calling this game at 6 o'clock.
So if Maryland wins this game, they are the regular season Big Ten champ. They will be the number 1 seed because of their head-to-head over Penn State. Hopkins wins this game. Penn State loses. Hopkins is your number 1 seed in the Big Ten, which, look, a few months ago, we weren't talking about Hopkins being anywhere near the top of the Big Ten. We were, you know, 4th or 5th was where us and everybody else projected them to finish. So, you know, you look at this team, obviously it starts at the face-off dot, or you look at this game, I should say. Luke Wehrman against a combination of Narewski, Dunn, Callahan. Who's going to be able to get hot if you know, multiple Blue Jays aren't able to get a hot hand against Luke Wehrman? The goaltenders in this game, you got a freshman in Brian Ruppel. You've got an experienced goaltender in Tim Marcille. Both defenses are tough and physical, nasty. You know, and then you have attack units that are led by guys who are just, you know, really, really good players, but not like your top shelf, considered to be a first, second, or third team All-American, probably. And then you look at the midfields. You know, Hopkins can go 9 deep offensively in the midfield position. Maryland's first midfield the last couple of weeks has struggled. Jack Corris, Jack Brennan, and Kyle Long. The second midfield unit, Alex Spanos, Zach Whittier, and Ryan Siracusa have done great, you know. So this game really, I mean, I think you have to, you know, Maryland, the line's probably 1.5, maybe, because it's at College Park. And I know the Terp Nation will be out in full force, but Hopkins is going to give them a run. This is going to be a really good lacrosse game.
Yeah, and talk about how disheartening last year's game was, and Coach Milliman talked about a little bit how they're not focused on, he doesn't need to talk about it because it's on people's minds, and the Blue Jays will be, they'll be ready to go, and both teams will be. This is a big game, as it always is. Rounding out the games, Dix, this week, number 8 Army at Navy. Army is 9-2, coming off that loss to Cornell, 6-0 in the Patriot League. They'll play a hot Navy team that's rebounded and coming into form later in the season. They're 7-6 overall, but 4-2 in the Patriot League. This game's at 7 o'clock on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big game. Obviously, it's a rivalry, but you really got to give a lot of credit to Navy. They had a 6-game losing streak, lost a lot of top players, top scorers, and now they've beaten BU. They beat Loyola. Last weekend, they beat Lafayette. So they've rebounded. You know, I'm really happy for a young man, Paul Garza, who's a kid that I coached with Rough Riders for a couple of years. Henry Tolker, you know, he was kind of the odd man out. Xavier Arline was running the offense, and all the kid does is score goals. So he's in the lineup doing extremely well. And their goaltender, Pat Ryan, is playing very, very well. Army's going to be smarting from losing last weekend to Cornell. And I know it's cliche, but when you talk about Army-Navy, you do throw the records out the window. You do throw this out the window, that out the window. All that matters is the 60 minutes between the lines, the intensity, the emotion, the tradition. But this game is going to be physical, and it'll be fun. You know, it's a great atmosphere. And Navy's already revealed new uniforms that very much resemble, if not exactly resemble, what they wore in the Army-Navy football game this past winter. I haven't seen anything from Army. Have you?
I haven't seen anything yet, but that's always
I'm sure fun. I'm sure they'll roll something out.
It's always fun when teams roll out new kits for big games. It's just fun. Makes it that much more special. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. We got a good one. We're going to talk about robberies, but first, got to reference a message we got from one of our listeners, longtime listener, Logan Cummins. He's getting married on Friday, April 21st, today. He's getting married.
Congratulations, Logan.
He's a longtime listener, and he may be our most knowledgeable fan. He said in his message that he remembered a story you told about your own wedding day at some point. I don't remember you telling this. And I was at your wedding. I don't remember any of this. But he is saying that he's going to make sure he always he has more to eat than just a bowl of cereal, which is just an incredible memory.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I only had that day up until the wedding. We had a 5:30 ceremony or mass. I think, I had a bowl of blueberry. That was it.
And to honor Logan and his bride on their wedding day, he asked a couple questions, and I'd love to get your opinion on these. First question is, have you met anybody? And if so, who have you met in the lacrosse world that made you starstruck?
So this is our wedding gift to Logan by answering these questions.
This is our wedding gift.
Oh, I love it. Answer these questions. Don't have to go into a registry and get like a butter knife for serving dishes or things of that nature.
Hot plate set of.
Actually, yeah, I can answer this. There's two. Jeff Cook, former Blue Jay attackman, who unfortunately is no longer with us. I remember meeting him at the old Bob Scott lacrosse camp when I was a kid. And the other one is Del Dressel, another Johns Hopkins All-American. And I can remember, I don't remember the year, but I remember it was the summer after the spring season where Del had gotten a penalty or gotten kicked out of a game for fighting against an Army player. They were playing Army at Homewood Field. My father had taken me and my brother to the game. And
I was there.
You know, what's that?
I was at that game in 1989.
Is it 83?
I think it was the spring of 1989.
No, Dell was gone. Dell was graduating like 85, 86.
Then there was another fight with Army in another year. I was at a game where a brawl broke out against Army at Homewood Field.
Huh.
It could have been that. I don't mean to blow up your story, but I was at that game, and I just assumed it was like, I thought it was the year before I went to college, like the spring of, but I could have been visiting my brother who graduated in 85 and watching a game then. It was like the first time I'd ever seen lacrosse played.
You're like a real speed bump when it comes to me telling stories.
I remember being at there, and like it was like my first college lacrosse game and seeing a brawl break out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just remember we used to go like get autographs from all the guys, typically last night of camp. And I remember asking Dell, like, oh man, what was it like to get in that fight against Army? And you know, he was just like, oh man, it was crazy and blah blah blah. And I don't even remember really what he said, but just the fact that I was like talking to Dell Dressel. And then fast forward years later, this is how much of a geek I am. I just feel like the 80s Hopkins players, they're the greatest generation of Hopkins lacrosse players. You know, Del Dressel, Jeff Cook is in there, Larry Quinn, John D. Tommaso, Brad McClam, you know, and then Don Zimmerman coached those guys. So at the Smoker, a couple years, this is the last Smoker before COVID. And then, of course, the Smoker was reinstituted this year. Don Zimmerman was the Zim was not the MC. It was John D. Tommaso, but Zim was there. And afterwards, we all went over to the Red Star, which is now Bus Boys and Poets, which used to be the site of the Wawa Fraternity House. And just hanging out with all those guys was really, really cool. And we all left. It was like 11:30 or midnight. And I had parked at the Athletic Center, behind the Athletic Center, and so did Dell. So it was just me and Dell walking up 33rd Street, crossing over Charles. He had no idea how to get back to the Athletic Center, which was kind of funny. And then I'm such a geek. Like, I had such a good time catching up with those guys and talking with those guys. I'm like, wow, man. I'm like, you know, hanging out with one of five four-time first-team All-Americans in the history of the sport, you know. And he can't find his car, so I'm going to help him find his car.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Jeff Cook, Del Dressel. Those are my two.
So
what about you?
Our friend Logan, in his message, he said that his guy was Garrett Gate. He was starstruck when he met Garrett Gate in a bar in Princeton, New Jersey. And he thought it was funny that other people didn't recognize Garrett Gate. I'm going to go a different tact. I'm going to say one of the things I like about lacrosse is that the people are so down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first time I ever saw Garrett Gate in person, I told this story before. It was at the Lacrosse Hall of Fame. They used to do a luncheon in there, and I'm standing there eating a sandwich on, like, looking at the Air Gate statue that they have in the Hall of Fame during, like, a meeting. And Gary was there. He was coaching the assistant coach for the women's team at Maryland. And he was standing on the leaning on his own statue, also eating a sandwich. And I look up. I'm looking at the Air Gate statue, and I look up, and he's standing there leaning on it, like his hip was against it or his butt or something. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's the guy. Like, and my point is, they're just so approachable. And then I've met the Powells and other. I've met the Hopkins guys that you're talking about, and they're, to almost a person, a man, pretty approachable. You know, I
agree.
That's the way they're.
Gary and Paul Gate are two of the nicest guys you'd ever meet in your life.
Yeah, for sure.
Really good dudes.
Yeah. So that's it. And then his second question, Logan tells a story that he works for an international company, and someone had come to an executive had come over across the pond, and he had to drive in the car to Boston with this executive. He was sort of chaperoning him or helping him to a meeting. And it was a Friday, so of course he had the D-Fly and Dixie podcast on in his car on the ride. And the English person was asking, like, what is lacrosse? So, you know, he had to describe to him the game. So I'm asking you this. How would you describe lacrosse, Dixie, to someone who has no frame of reference for the game?
I would call it, it's a little, you know, rudimentary, but it's got, like, the hand-eye coordination of hockey, the athleticism and the movement of basketball, and to a point, you know, the physicality of football and, you know, hockey in terms of, you know, the hitting and the toll it takes on your body and all that kind of thing. That would kind of be my summation of it. And then you got to try to get into the explanation of the sticks and the ball and equipment and all that stuff, but top level, it would be what I said about, you know, the combination of hockey, basketball, football.
I agree. So, Logan, I hope those answers were what you were looking for, and congratulations on your nuptials. All right, Dix, it's rivalry week. So our give and go this week, I'm going to ask you to rank some of the world's most famous rivalries. So I'm going to ask you to do two things. On a scale of 1 to 10, I want you, with 10 being the best and most intense competition between the two rivals. So I want you to rank them 1 to 10.
Okay.
And then second, I need you to pick the team in the rivalry that you would root for.
Okay.
So I'm not going to ask any lacrosse ones because, you know, you broadcast a lot of games. You know, I want you to have to pick sides. But there are some college ones, but there are other sports. So you would just tell me. And I want to do this pretty quick. I got a long list of
oh, geez.
So we'll do it kind of rapid fire. You just can, again, 1 to 10 in terms of the intensity of the rivalry, because some go and some fade based on, you know, the people who are playing, the competitiveness on a national level or of each of the teams involved, and you know, things come and go. All right, first, we'll start in, like, football. Ohio State, Michigan.
That's like an 8 for me. I always make a point to watch that football game. Yeah, I really do enjoy that rivalry. Not necessarily who's playing, but it's more the environment. You know, the Shoe and the Big House, just, what, 100, over 100,000 people? Typically have weather. You know, if it's not snowing, it's, like, absolutely butt cold. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's typically the defenses matter. You know, what I mean by that is like SEC, it's, you know, kind of more high scoring, more passing. This one's a little bit more, you know, a D end is going to have a big play. A cornerback is going to have a big play. Running backs are going to have big days. So that's like an eight for me.
Okay.
And I root typically for Michigan.
All right. Still in college football. Harvard yet?
I don't really pay much attention to that. I used to love finding the random Ivy League football game on a college football Saturday. I want to say it would be like a Comcast or an NBC Sports Washington would have it. And it was when they played on grass. It made it so much more appealing to me. Now that everybody has turf and, I don't know, the game's pretty slow relative to Ohio State, Michigan. I'd call that one maybe like a four.
Okay.
And I would be rooting for Yale in that situation.
Army, Navy.
It's funny. You have to love the pageantry and the tradition of it and the fact that both still have to play triple option, the wishbone, you know, just to survive in Division I football. And I kind of go back and forth with who I root for, but that's always the first Saturday in December, second Saturday in December, right?
Around
that one. So again, you typically get weather. It's typically in Philadelphia, but that one would be maybe like a six.
Ravens Steelers.
I mean, to me, that rivalry is like a seven. But Pittsburgh and Baltimore, I mean, we love to make fun of one another, get after one another. The Pittsburgh Steelers organization is actually a really classy organization.
Yeah,
Mike Tomlin's a really, really good coach. I don't know what he was thinking that one year where he tried to stick his foot out on Jacoby Jones. But there really isn't like a villain anymore in the series. You know, Hines Ward is gone. Joey Porter is gone. Big Ben is gone, even though he was never like really he was always complimentary to the Ravens. So on the other side, Terrell Suggs is gone. Ray Lewis is gone.
Ed Reed.
Yeah, but Ed was like Roethlisberger. He was always like respectful. He didn't really talk a lot of smack. And they play twice a year as well. So that takes a little bit of luster off of it. But, you know, maybe probably a seven.
Okay. Yankees, Red Sox.
I could care less about the Yankees and the Red Sox. I can't stand either one of them. And it really kind of like, you know, when you see the promo, Red Sox, Yankees tonight, you know, it's like they're going to play like 30 times this year. You know, who cares? That's like a one. I mean, I was kind of excited when the Red Sox finally beat the Yankees, the Curt Schilling, the Blood Sox, and they came back from the 3-0 deficit. But I really didn't know that much about the Red Sox or their fan base. No.
I feel like that's
Yankees, Red Sox. Ugh.
I think ESPN gets really good ratings for those games.
I'm sure.
For baseball. And they love promoting the Yankees, Red Sox games. And as a fan of, you know, a Baltimore or Phillies fan, like it's just too much. I'm so sick of them.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna do the rest of them. I got a bunch more. We'll do them rapid fire. You just tell me you're the team you would root for in these, and if you want to give me a reason why, you can go ahead and say. But we don't worry about the intensity right now. Ready?
Yeah.
Lakers, Celtics.
Wow. Growing up, that was fun. Growing up, I rooted for the Celtics, but after watching Winning Time, the show about the Lakers, and seeing how much, if it was accurate, which I know a lot of it wasn't. But Red Auerbach seemed like a real jerk. I would probably root for the Lakers. But no, you know what? I like Larry Bird. Larry Legend is my guy. So I'd go Celtics.
All right.
But my dislike of the Lakers was lessened greatly after watching Winning Time.
Coke versus Pepsi.
Coke all day.
McDonald's versus Burger King.
McDonald's. I can't remember last time I had. Although the Whopper is pretty good, but I mean, if you ever, not that I eat fast food, but if you're ever thinking fast food, it's typically like a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Home Depot versus Lowe's.
I am not a handyman. So whichever one has what I need, But I would say, because Home Depot is closer to us, and I know my way around Home Depot more, so I'd go Home Depot.
I'm a Lowe's man all the way.
Are you?
Yeah. West Coast wrap versus East Coast wrap.
Oh, man, that's East Coast. I've grown. I think Biggie might be the best of all time. And you know, when I was younger, it was more Snoop Dogg, Dre. Never been a big Tupac guy, and I don't like Puffy, but Biggie is, man, his beats legit.
All right,
legit. But I did hear something recently that his estate is being sued for plagiarism. Like somebody's claiming that Biggie stole his lyrics or beats or something like that.
Ford versus Chevy.
Chevy Equinox. Although my wife drives a Ford Explorer. I'm torn. I don't really care about that.
I'm gonna go for it. Nintendo versus Sega.
Oh man, Nintendo. Nothing was like Nintendo growing up. You know, Double Dribble and the hockey game. But I mean, Sega Genesis. Come on, man. NHL 94, NHL 93. Used to play we used to play that nonsense hours on end in college. Got to go with Sega. This is one for our buddy getting married. For a wedding gift, my wife gave me a Sega Dreamcast. They had just come out. She gave me a Sega Dreamcast.
Surf versus turf.
Turf, because I'm allergic to most surf.
White wine versus red wine.
Red wine.
And finally, iPhone versus Android.
iPhone. I have both, and the Android sucks.
All right. That's a good place to stop.
That was really good. That was actually pretty fun.
Thank you. We'd like to thank Hopkins coach Peter Milliman for joining us this week. Coach, best of luck to the Blue Jays this week and moving forward on the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review. Tell a friend. Share the love. It's free, and that's how they can find us. You can also email me. I love getting these emails from people. Or if you want to be a sponsor, contact me. It's dbflynn@gmail.com. That's D as in Daniel, B as in Bennett, F as in Flynn, LYNN@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter. He's @DixonLacrosse. I'm simply @D_FLY. And as always, enjoy the games.
All right.